The next case on our calendar today is Snap Fitness, Inc. versus Garrett Marshall and Exponential Fitness, LLC. You can take a minute to get settled at council table, and then we'll proceed. You heard a minute ago, each party will have 15 minutes for your argument. Counsel for appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. If you can please introduce yourself at the beginning of the argument and the party you represent, we would appreciate that. We are recording the arguments here today, and feel free to adjust the podium.
Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, Council. My name is Randall Smith for Appellant Exponential Fitness, LLC. May it please the Court. Exponential is a California company. It is being sued in this case for employing Garrett Marshall at its headquarters in California in a role that has no specific focus on Minnesota. The District Court's determination that it could exercise specific personal jurisdiction over Exponential on these claims is an error for two separate reasons. First, none of the evidence that Snap offered to establish jurisdiction has any connection with the conduct underlying Snap's claims against Exponential. The District Court's decision thus violates the basic principle that specific personal jurisdiction exists only if a plaintiff's claims arise out of or relate to a defendant's contacts with the forum.
But isn't it true in the complaint that if you look at paragraph 64 through 66, that Exponential had knowledge of the restrictive covenants, Exponential permitted and or encouraged the breaches of those restrictive covenants by Marshall, and Exponential induced those breaches with malicious intent?
So two answers. First, it's the obligation of Snap to come forward with competent evidence to establish jurisdiction.
This is not a summary judgment motion. This is a motion to dismiss. Is there any case law that you've cited that says that we cannot consider allegations in a complaint on this type of motion? I understand that there's affidavit evidence, but it's also clear that Exponential has not contested those allegations in any way.
Exponential hasn't answered because it's filed its motion to dismiss, but I would point the court to the Saucer case. That holds that whereas here the defendant accompanied its motion to dismiss with an affidavit or other evidence disputing jurisdiction, the plaintiff cannot rest on their allegations alone. They have to come forward with competent evidence sufficient to show contacts with the forum state and that the claims arise out of those contacts with the forum state. And I would further note that even on the allegations alone, all Snap really alleges is that Exponential, after having already made a job offer to Marshall, became aware of the non-qualified stock option award agreement and continued to employ him despite being aware of that agreement and his dispute with his former employer.
That's a curious part of the case to me. With a tortious interference with contract claim, which the plaintiff is alleging, Snap is alleging is ongoing throughout the entire year of the non-compete agreement. Mr. Marshall would be bound, the argument goes, by that non-compete agreement for the entire year. And so that part of the contract continues to exist, and it is continuously being tortiously interfered with. I think that's what the argument is. So why would it matter whether your client knew beforehand or at some point during the course of the negotiations or even after your client hired Mr. Marshall? Doesn't the claim arise from, arguably, contact in Minnesota, breaching a contract that was created in Minnesota and was designed to be performed in Minnesota?
So the contexts that matter in this case, the conduct that matters in this case is the conduct of Exponential itself. So they would have to show, and the test comes from Griffiths v. Lubin in the intentional tort context, the court holds that the plaintiff must show to establish jurisdiction that the defendant expressly aimed the tortious conduct at the forum such that the forum state was the focal point of the tortious activity. And it's clearly established that merely causing foreseeable harm in a forum state is not enough to give rise to jurisdiction in that forum state. So to satisfy that test, SNAP would here have to come forward with some evidence to show that Exponential somehow intentionally directed its conduct in hiring and employing Marshall at the state of Minnesota, and they have come forward with no such evidence.
Well, how would that work? How does that work, just hypothetically? I know it's not the facts of this case, or maybe it is. We don't know how the facts would develop. You're saying that there's no evidence supporting the allegations. But let's say you've got an out-of-state, you've got a foreign corporation whose practice it is to go and poach employees from other states, including states where there's a contract in existence, a non-compete agreement. What about that? What if a state is communicating with one of the parties to the contract, the employee, within the forum state, and tries to secure the breach of the employment contract during these negotiations or communications between the forum state and the third party state? Why would that not be enough for arising under jurisdiction or related to contacts with the forum state for specific personal jurisdiction?
So attenuated or fortuitous contacts with a forum state are not sufficient to give rise to jurisdiction. So if in a case like here, there is of course no evidence of this whatsoever, but if it could be shown, for example, that some email was sent or perhaps a call to Marshall telling him that he had the job offer and he received the call in Minnesota after having interviewed in California, I would submit that that's just a fortuitous contact with the forum state if the ultimate position that he's being hired for is a position in California at a California company with no specific focus on the state of Minnesota itself. It would obviously be a different story if it could be shown that a company was poaching someone in the state of Minnesota for the precise purpose of trying to obtain more business in Minnesota or something like that. But there has been no showing of that in this case and no allegation of that. Nothing in the complaint alleges that Marshall's role at Exponential will be in any way specifically directed at the state of Minnesota.
Well, the district court seemed to suppose that there may be some of that going on.
So the district court, again, I would point out that there has to be competent evidence. The district court speculated that because Exponential has various subsidiaries, and at least one of the subsidiaries, the evidence showed, StretchLab, has at least two franchise locations in Minnesota, and Marshall's work at Exponential will span across the various subsidiaries owned by Exponential, that maybe in some way some of his work at Exponential will somehow reach the state of Minnesota. To that I would say, first, they have to come forward with competent evidence, not a long chain of speculation to establish jurisdiction. And second, even if they did come forward with some evidence that he may at some point in his time at Exponential be involved with some app that is available in the state of Minnesota in the same way it would be available across the country, that would not be enough, because the Minnesota Supreme Court has clearly held, and this is the Riley v. Money Mutual case, that efforts to target the national market of the United States do not equate to targets with a particular state. So they would have to show that his role at Exponential will be somehow specifically focused on the state of Minnesota. And again, there's been no evidence to that point and not even any allegations on
that. And Bristol-Myers sort of lays that out as well.
Yeah, I think that's precisely correct. And Bristol-Myers makes clear that they cannot piggyback on kind of general contacts with the forum state unrelated to the cause of action to create specific personal jurisdiction.
Here, Exponential hired a recruiter to help with the hiring of Marshall. Would you agree with that?
The affidavit does state at Addendum 12 that Exponential hired a California-based recruiting company to place Marshall with Exponential.
And that recruiter was an agent of Exponential.
I mean, there hasn't been any evidence about the relation between
working on behalf of Exponential. Certainly.
It was engaged to fill a spot at Exponential.
So why is that contact not sufficient to create personal jurisdiction in this case, given that the case revolves around interference with a non-compete agreement?
So again, I would say that even if the recruiter's conduct can be imputed to Xponential, they would have to show that the recruiting company somehow targeted its hiring campaign at the state of Minnesota to fill a position that would be targeted at the state.
Well, you're talking about general jurisdiction, it sounds to me. If the specific conduct that gave rise to the lawsuit occurred in Minnesota by activities of your client, or I think you're assuming that the agency principle applies here, your client's agent in Minnesota directing towards an employee in Minnesota to breach a contract that was created in Minnesota to be performed in Minnesota, why is that not specific enough for specific personal jurisdiction?
So there is no evidence in the record that the recruiting company engaged in any conduct in Minnesota, that it directed any communications at the state of Minnesota. It simply says that all the evidence says is that the Xponential engaged a recruiting company to place Marshall.
So is it your contention that it was all telephonic communication or some kind of digital communication, but they recruited a high level? Mr. Marshall was a high level employee of SNAP. Presumably, he would have contracts, at that high of a level of some sort, with at least confidentiality agreements, if not some kind of a non-compete, that wouldn't support specific jurisdiction for a tortious interference claim? I mean, does the recruiting company then have to physically come to Minnesota in order to have, that seems like you're taking it to an extreme there.
Yeah, so first I would say there is no evidence of telephonic communications, email communications.
Well, there was some, we have to assume there was some kind of communication because he got this job and he got a job offer. So there had to be communication of some sort. In the record, there's the offer letter. So there clearly was communication, and I'm assuming that was sent to him while he was in Minnesota.
Perhaps, and he flew to California to interview. But I think the broader point is that simply, any single telephone, call or email is not sufficient to give rise to jurisdiction. Again, the test is that they have to show...
What if that very specific one... I mean, you can have a single incident that gives rise to specific jurisdiction. You acknowledge that, I suppose.
Yeah,
If the argument is you convinced our client to breach his, or my our employee to breach his contract, that's tortious interference, and you did so by communicating with our employee in Minnesota, and that's the nature of that's very specific as to the claim, sufficient for specific personal jurisdiction, isn't it?
So, again, I would say, based on the complaint, and there's no evidence, but even on the complaint, they do not allege that Xponential recruited him or knew about his job offer, knew about the contract when they made the offer to him. All they allege is that he subsequently informed Xponential about the contract and about the suit after they had already made the offer to him.
Hypothetically, just so I understand your position as a matter of law, and so we can frame at least the legal question, would you agree that would be enough for specific personal jurisdiction if the hypothetical I suggested were supported with evidence in this case, that there was a recruiter who contacted an employee in Minnesota who had a contract in Minnesota with another party in Minnesota, and the contract was to be performed in Minnesota, and the allegation is both breach by the employee, but more specifically tortious interference by the outstate foreign corporation. Would you agree that that's enough for specific personal jurisdiction?
I think that alone would probably not be enough because, again, they have to show purposeful availment of the state of Minnesota. So I think if they're just hiring someone for a nationwide role with no specific focus on the Minnesota...
Let me add one fact to my hypothetical then. Assume that the recruiter acting on behalf of the a foreign company was aware of the non-compete agreement at the time of the engagement. or the communication?
If they're aware of the non-compete agreement, I think, again, that would just show that their conduct would cause foreseeable harm in Minnesota. But the Minnesota Supreme Court has made clear, and the U.S. Supreme Court as well, have made clear that merely causing foreseeable harm in a forum state is not sufficient. So I would point
the court. I'm talking about harm. The actual breach then would be to the contract in Minnesota. I guess I'm lost in what would you say would be necessary, a necessary additional circumstance to my hypothetical for personal jurisdiction to occur?
So if they could show that, for example, their hiring of a person away from a former employer in Minnesota was specifically motivated by the desire to, for example, gain contacts that that person had acquired during the time that he worked for that company, or to expand the business into the state of Minnesota, that could all be sufficient if it was supported with competent evidence to establish jurisdiction. But merely alleging you knew about this agreement, and again, here they don't allege they knew about the agreement,
sure,
but merely alleging you knew about the agreement and you did this and we suffered the harm in our forms in our forum state would mean that the plaintiff could always sue in its forum state, and the Supreme Court has made clear that that's not the case. See, my time's done.
Thank you. I have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Respondent?
I'm going to exercise the podium here.
That's good. We want to make sure it gets some use, the function gets some use.
May it please the court and counsel, my name is Holly Robbins. I am representing Snap Fitness here today. I'm here with my colleague Lauren Clements, and also here from Snap Fitness is Danelle Karen, who's general counsel there. And we're here today to ask the court to affirm the decision of the district court, finding that personal jurisdiction indeed exists in Minnesota with respect to Exponential, and that Exponential was indeed properly served. So a few of the basic critical facts, and I know the court is familiar, but I want to state some of the ones that I think are the most critical here. Snap filed suit against Mr. Marshall, who was the CEO of its subsidiary, Fitness On Demand, so a high-level employee, after he advised the company that he intended to go to work for Exponential in California. Both of these companies are fitness franchisors. The suit is based on his breach, or that original suit was based on his breach of the restrictive covenants in his non-qualified stock option award agreement with Snap. Snap is a Minnesota corporation, obviously, and Mr. Marshall was a Minnesota resident. And when he commenced his work with Exponential as their head of consumer streaming, Snap amended its complaint to include Exponential in the lawsuit. So at that point,
I'm sorry, but what evidence is there aside from the complaint allegations showing a basis for specific jurisdiction, because that's the grounds on which the district court.
So I would first
but
say,
what would you point
sure,
to?
Sure, that the complaint allegations are should be considered, unlike what opposing counsel said. This is a motion to dismiss at this point.
You get to Judge Siegel's question, what case law supports that proposition that we can rely? That you can rely just on the averments in the complaint when a personal jurisdiction challenge has been made?
Sorry, I don't have a specific case to cite to you.
Doesn't the case law say that you cannot rely upon the complaint averments and you have to present evidence in response to a challenge?
No, I don't think that that's what the case law says.
If we thought that the case law said that, would you acknowledge that the evidence was not provided beyond the complaint sufficient to establish personal jurisdiction?
No, Your Honor. I think that there's evidence in this record that also supports this. There is evidence in the record regarding the offer that was made. There is evidence in the record regarding the job description for Mr. Marshall when he goes to work at at Exponential, and there's also evidence in the record that Mr. Marshall was indeed a high-level employee working for a Minnesota corporation, and that was a Minnesota resident, and that Exponential hired him away from the company.
Thank you. I took you off the track of you were answering Judge Siegel's question.
Well, actually, I think maybe in answering your question, I answered your question. But if you had a further question there, I would
nope.
Certainly.
Thank you, Judge Ross,
for redirecting me. Thank you. All right. And so when he commenced his work with Exponential in that role, we amended the lawsuit and alleged tortious interference with contracts, unfair competition, and sought injunctive relief against Exponential as well because of this interference with a contract between two Minnesota residents.
Is there evidence in the record of any communication that occurred between either the defendant or the defendant's agent recruiting Mr. Marshall?
Defendant and the defendant's agent. There is not record evidence of the specific communications. However, plainly, there was communication between that agent.
Right, but is there any information in the any evidence in the record that the communication occurred while Mr. Marshall was in Minnesota?
I don't believe there is. There is an offer letter, though, to him, and I believe that's addressed to him at his home, which was in Minnesota.
Is there any evidence in the record that the defendant or the defendant's agent was aware before the offer of the confidentiality agreement or the non-compete agreement?
No, I don't think so. But I think what's more critical there is not that they whether they knew about it before the offer was made, but that they went ahead and started to employ him after this suit had actually been filed. And so plainly at that point.
But they employed him before the suit was filed.
They filed him, I think they employed him just after the suit against Mr. Marshall was filed. So we did amend the complaint after Mr. Marshall had begun working for Exponential to include Exponential. Did not seek a suit against them at a time when we didn't know if perhaps they weren't going to go through with that employment. So Mr. Marshall was hired to provide technology services and services to Exponential's affiliate brands. Those affiliate brands, it's undisputed, they do exist here.
It seems to me, maybe I'm looking at this case too narrowly, but that the Bristol-Myers decision, the Terrell decision, BNSF decision, and the Daimler Supreme Court decisions from 2014, the last two being in 2017, sort of reset the table for what constitutes general jurisdiction and specific jurisdiction. Do you agree with that?
They do, to some degree,
I was sort of at a loss to none of those cases make an appearance in the district court's analysis. Were those cases brought to the district court's attention as establishing the standard that has to be applied both with regard to general jurisdiction and specific jurisdiction?
Your Honor, I don't recall right off the top of my head, but obviously that would be in the record. But I think even under the current standard, the certainly specific jurisdiction applies here. We have here a California corporation that reaches out and hires a Minnesota employee from a Minnesota company. This is not a low-level employee. This is a ranking employee.
It's the part I'm lost in the record is your statement that the California company reached out to him in Minnesota. And that, I think, is what you've acknowledged is lacking in the record as far as evidence goes of communication of this reaching out from California into Minnesota.
I don't think that it's necessary to have the actual, like a letter come or an email. The communications are plainly coming to Mr. Marshall. Mr. Marshall is a Minnesota citizen, and Mr. Marshall had a relationship.
When you say plainly, you mean we can infer that?
I think absolutely. I mean, they knew he was in Minnesota. There's no dispute in the record that they knew he was a Minnesota citizen or that he was working for a Minnesota corporation, I think. So I do think that it is that it can be said that Exponential reached out and interfered with this relationship between these two parties.
Well, the district court seemed to rely upon future behavior. The district court said, to the extent Marshall will be supporting those affiliates in his new role mm-hmm. with Exponential, Exponential's contacts with Minnesota are directly related to this proceeding. First of all, do you agree that with the district court's theory that you can rely upon future behavior that's not established as evidence? And do you agree that the district court, or do you believe the district court was correct in relying upon potential future engagement when there's no evidence in the record that engagement, that behavior would occur between Mr. Marshall and the affiliates?
Yes, to the extent that that's what the job that they hired him for was. It wasn't just to work with Minnesota affiliates and franchisees, but it included work with Minnesota affiliates and franchisees.
So your position is that the contacts can be established for personal jurisdiction based upon conduct that may occur in the future?
Well, I think that would be the case with almost any situation where you're hiring someone. To the extent that...
Is there case law to support that theory of personal jurisdiction?
I can't identify one. I would point to the C.H. Robinson case, which I think is very much on point with this case. In that case, the foreign corporation had reached out to hire employees from a Minnesota company who actually didn't even work in Minnesota and were not Minnesota residents, but had an agreement that had that subjected them to jurisdiction in the state.
What about this finding of the district court? The district court said those Minnesota contacts imply Exponential routinely participates in training, marketing, and real estate site selection for its affiliates. And this was based upon screenshots.
Yes.
Those Minnesota contacts imply that Exponential routinely engages in this behavior. Does the record support that speculation?
I believe it does. I think the screenshots show that there is this connection between Exponential and the state of Minnesota. But also, Exponential has repeatedly in its briefing noted that that Mr. Marshall was hired to work with affiliates and franchisees across the country. And they say, well, it's across the country, so it's not specifically connected to Minnesota. But that includes, it has franchisees and affiliates operate here.
So that argument seems to me to run headlong into Bristol-Myers. Convince me that I'm wrong.
It's because it's not just that. He is hired from Minnesota to work.
So that factor, though, you suggest that factor is relevant. And yes. Bristol-Myers seems to suggest that factor is not relevant, doesn't support specific jurisdiction.
The factor that he would be working across the country.
You said that, well, he's in Minnesota.
Right.
One of the affiliates may be in Minnesota, and he's working across the country. But because one is in Minnesota, that is significant. It seems Bristol-Myers says that's not significant.
Bristol-Myers says the suit must arise for specific jurisdiction. The suit must arise out of or relate to the defendant's contacts with the forum. So what contacts does Exponential have? Not does Mr. Marshall have in the future, but what contacts does Exponential have with Minnesota rise to personal jurisdiction?
It has the contacts of hiring a Minnesota employee from a Minnesota corporation, high-level employee.
But the evidence shows that all the hiring activity by Exponential went on outside of the state. The only information in the record that suggests any contact with the state is the recruiter, but there's no information as to how the recruiter actually contacted Mr. Marshall. So we don't even know if that happened in Minnesota. So
there's an offer letter, certainly, to him. So that's part of the part
so
of this.
So sending the offer letter to Minnesota, you think, is sufficient to create?
I think it is. Yeah, I do. Given the situation with the Minnesota employee and the Minnesota corporation from which he's being hired. But
if at the time of the offer letter, there's no evidence that Exponential was aware of the non-compete agreement, and therefore there was no tortious interference, the elements are lacking for tortious interference at that time, mm-hmm. How can that be a basis of personal jurisdiction?
And that's precisely why we didn't file the suit against Exponential until he went to work there. So
then the offer letter is not the basis of personal contact with Minnesota.
But it's certainly related to him ending up going to work there. He wouldn't end up at work there had he not received the offer letter in the first place.
Right, but the lawsuit then wouldn't arise out of the contact with the state if that is the only contact with the state, unless there was an awareness, which we don't have in the record, of the knowledge by Exponential of the potential for interference.
No, I think the contact certainly arises in the state, because the other two parties are in the state, and by the time they hired him, then they knew that, I mean, they had hired him away from Minnesota.
You're referring to the offer letter, though. I'm talking about
yes.
The offer letter.
Yes, but the offer letter is part of the hiring process.
Okay.
Had he not received an offer letter, he would never end up working for them in California. And so I think that is part of this continuum. But until he leaves employment, Exponential has an opportunity to back out of its own tortious interference.
In other words, they're continuing to tortiously interfere throughout the entire year, so
yes.
It doesn't matter whether the original communication, they
yes.
were aware at the time of the original communication,
right.
They were aware as they continue.
Yes. Yes. Unless there are other questions.
Any further questions? All right.
Thank you.
You very much. Rebuttal?
Okay, so I'd like to start with Judge Ross's question. So I think the case law is clear that there has to be competent evidence. It cannot be allegations in the complaint, and I would point the court to the Saucer decision and the Allease Covey Betts decision. Furthermore, this is a case that's on de novo review, so there's no reason why there would be any difference to the district court's assessment. This court is looking at the same seven internet screenshots that the district court had before it, so they either give rise to jurisdiction or they don't. There's no need for any sort of deference. Two, I would say, I note that counsel said that Marshall's work at Exponential will include work for Minnesota affiliates. There is no evidence of that. There's no evidence to suggest that his work will necessarily include work for Minnesota affiliates. And again, they have to come forward with competent evidence.
Let me play my hand just so I can tell you what my sticking point is in my mind about your client's position. And that's your client's awareness before hiring Mr. Marshall of the non-compete agreement. Do you agree there's evidence to support your client's knowledge of this non-compete agreement at the time that he was hired? Maybe not the offer letter, but at the time that he began work.
At the time he began work, they have not offered any evidence, but their complaint alleges that he informed them, and the suit had already been brought against Marshall at
right,
that point.
Right, the lawsuit would give you your client a pretty good indication that there is put your client on notice of this term in the contract.
Yeah, so I would say there's no dispute that Marshall is subject to jurisdiction in Minnesota.
Right.
He worked for a Minnesota company for many years. The claims arise out of a contract he had with that company. That's clear. The question is whether Exponential, because the Supreme Court emphasized in Bristol-Myers Squibb that jurisdiction is about the relationship between the defendant and the forum. It can't be established on the basis of the plaintiff's contacts with the forum, the plaintiff's interest in having
right.
the case in its own backyard. So the if the court could exercise, if Minnesota could exercise jurisdiction based purely on the fact that Exponential went ahead with they had already made him the offer, but continued to employ him despite being aware of this suit that had.
Well, that's the argument that for tortious interference is your client is continuing to interfere with a contract that is in existence, prohibiting the competition between Mr. Marshall and Snap Fitness. So, why isn't that your client's right now the ongoing interference in a contract that exists in Minnesota and that began in Minnesota and is performed in Minnesota, why isn't that enough for at least maybe not arising out of but related to the forum state?
So again, they would have to show that Exponential's conduct in hiring and employing Marshall was somehow directed at the state of Minnesota. And it's not. He's in a national role. They've conceded that. He's employed in California, that's clear. They don't make any argument that his role at Exponential will be in any way specifically targeted at the state of Minnesota, that he's going to be focusing on the state of Minnesota.
So can I ask you a quick question? So if, in fact, Exponential knew about this non-compete and said, we don't care, your information is so valuable, as a matter of fact, that's one of the reasons we want to hire you. But the record was otherwise identical. Would that be enough of a contact with Minnesota? I mean, it doesn't have to be, and we hate Minnesota, and we want to go after businesses that have their principal place of business in Minnesota. I mean, so what's the distinction? What is the, when would it be enough? So it's a C.H. Robinson situation versus what you're arguing.
So if there were actual evidence that they hired him for the specific purpose of gaining information mm-hmm. that he had from Snap, that would be a different story. That could show purposeful availment of the state of Minnesota. But there's no evidence of that, certainly.
I just don't see why that's necessary. I'm not sure there's case law to support the idea that that's what's necessary. If the allegation is you breached our agreement, Mr. Marshall, you breached our agreement by leaving us because, and we're concerned you're taking stuff. You're taking our client list, you're taking our proprietary information from Minnesota to California.
So that would establish jurisdiction over Marshall in Minnesota, and there's no dispute that he's subject to jurisdiction in Minnesota. But again, for there to be I see that my time has expired. Can I finish?
You can go ahead.
For there to be jurisdiction over Exponential, there has to be some sort of contact between Exponential itself and the forum state. And I think if merely hiring a former employee of a Minnesota company, despite being aware of that dispute, of a dispute between that employee and his company, is sufficient to subject a company to jurisdiction in Minnesota, other states could apply the same rule to Minnesota.
Perhaps if the allegation was only breach of contract, but here you've got the extra allegation against your client of tortious interference. So your client's not just being accused of participating in Marshall's breach, which would be a different story, but that your client specifically is tortiously interfering in a contract that would protect Minnesota-based information, proprietary information at Snap Fitness.
May I answer despite the?
Certainly.
Okay. So to satisfy the test that the Minnesota Supreme Court set out in Griffiths v. Lubin, which involved the intentional tort context, they would have to show that Exponential expressly aimed its conduct at the state of Minnesota such that Minnesota could be said to be the focal point of the activity. And the Minnesota Supreme Court in Griffiths v. Lubin made clear that merely causing foreseeable harm in the forum state is not enough. So that's a case, I apologize for going over the time, but that's a case where...
I put you over the time, you don't have to apologize.
That's a case where it was a defamation case, the defendant was a Minnesota resident, the plaintiff was an Alabama resident. The plaintiff alleged that the defendant defamed her online, knowing that she was a resident of Alabama, knowing that she worked at a university at Alabama, knowing that her position at that university would be harmed as a result of the allegedly defamatory statements, and knowing further that she had a private business that she operated, a private consulting business that she operated in Alabama that would also be harmed as a result of the defamatory statements. And the Minnesota Supreme Court made clear that that was not enough to establish jurisdiction. It established foreseeable harm in the state of Alabama, but it didn't establish any sort of any way in which she directed her conduct at the state of Alabama as opposed to at the plaintiff. With that, I would thank the court.
Thank you very much. Thank you to both parties for your arguments here today and for your briefs. They were well done, and we'll look closely at this issue. It's a very, very interesting issue.
Thank you.